Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who served pimento cheese sandwiches at his wedding rehearsal dinner. True story, Charlie Nance.
Hey, welcome back. We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy, and it is high holy days. I lived and worked in Augusta, Georgia for 5.5 years in the late 90s and early 2000s. I fell in love with the Masters, Augusta National Golf Club, and all associated with either. I've been fortunate enough to play the course 6 times, and it is the greatest golf tournament on every level in the world. Oh, in second place, whoever that may be, trust me, it's not close. Now, normally, you'd think for political reasons, I would add something like, with all apologies to Johnny Harris, Quail Hollow Club, and the Wells Fargo Championship Team, but I don't have to. Mr. Harris is a member at Augusta. He knows. Hey, before we get to the show, I wanted to comment on an earth-shattering announcement made by the new chairman of Augusta National Golf Club, Fred Ridley. Beginning next spring, a female amateur championship will have its final 18 holes contested on the grounds of Augusta National the Saturday before Masters Week. Now, I hasten to point out that it was just 16 years ago that Martha Burke and the National Organization of Women went to war with the club over its lack of female inclusion in its membership. Shoot, it had no female members until what, 2012? And now the club is poised to do more for the ladies' game in this country than has ever been done by anyone ever. And I do not think that's an overstatement. Look at what happened to Drive, Chip, and Putt. This was a competition that was dying. I had a junior golfer living in my home who was the perfect age to participate, and we'd never heard of it. Then, 5 or 6 years ago, the club announced that the finals of the competition would be held at Augusta National the Sunday before the Masters. Not only is every local qualifying competition site packed, but the finals are televised live on the Golf Channel with Masters champions congratulating the kids. From nearly dead to the most popular junior competition in golf in less than 10 years. Now, it may take longer, but if you don't think the weight and support of Augusta National Golf Club won't do the same for ladies amateur golf in this country, another thought about Fred Ridley. This guy's a player, literally. He won the U.S. Amateur, captained the Walker Cup. Billy Payne, the past chairman, never wanted to make big alterations to the golf course, and he didn't. He did not want that to be his legacy. No, Payne was committed to growing the game and creating infrastructure at the club, and he was great at it. Chairman Ridley, as referenced by the aforementioned ladies' amateur tournament, will continue to be committed to the game's growth, but he also had some very pointed comments about the effect equipment has had on the game, specifically the way it was intended to be played at Augusta National. Do not be surprised if by the time the 2019 Masters rolls around, there are significant differences to the golf course, in particular, the famous 13th that wraps up Amen Corner. This is a chairman who will be unafraid to make changes to one of golf's most sacred grounds. And with his background as a player, they will be well thought out and logical. Plus, I think we all will agree with and like the changes as well. Anyway, this week on the show, we are all Masters. We'll check in with Ron Green Jr. from the tournament. Also, I had the chance to catch up this week with Scott Harvey, Carolina amateur golfing legend who participated in the 2015 Masters, to talk about what it's like to actually play in the tournament. But we begin with our boots on the ground in Augusta, my friend, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, John Patrick.
The excitement of having Tiger Woods back in the Masters and playing, I think he's missed 3 of the last 4 years. The excitement, or at least the hype, is palpable coming through the TV. I can only imagine what it's like there.
You know, it's great. I mean, it's been missed. It was fun to see yesterday. It was fun. It's been fun all week to watch the media gather up in a scrum, getting ready to talk to him, to watch the crowds. You know, it's been so long since we've seen that swarm of people just kind of make their way down a fairway and onto another tee. It's pretty exciting. It's great to have him back.
If you'd have told me 5 years ago that Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson would play a 9-hole practice round as partners at any tournament, much less the Masters, I would have told you that it was one of the signs of the apocalypse. Is it possible, and I think we may have talked about this before, is it possible that late in their careers, these two guys are realizing what they've meant to each other, whether they knew it or not at the time, a la Arnie and Jack? I mean, Arnie and Jack got along okay in the 60s and 70s, but late in life was when they became very close. Is there a good analogy there?
Yeah, I think the analogy is more relevant to the beginning of the relationship, because they make no bones about it. Arnold and Jack did not like each other. And yet there was always, you know, Arnold was always Arnold. You know, Arnold is the Phil in this story, and Tiger is the Jack. And there are some parallels, many parallels to this. I don't think there was so much animosity through the years on Phil's part. You know, that was pure Tiger and just the way he was and just the way he was driven. And it wasn't really so much about Phil as it was anybody. I mean, that's the way he was with anybody. And now that we've gotten to this point, again, I don't think this is a reflection on Phil. I think Phil has kind of always been this way. I think this is a change in Tiger's world and Tiger's life and Tiger's attitude. And you see it in almost every instance. And I think we've talked about this on the show. To watch him go from green to tee in a tournament, fist bumping. Who is that guy? Who is that? I don't know who that is. So I think the change has been purely Tiger. I think Phil has kind of stayed the way Phil always was.
John Patrick is the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Augusta National, notoriously guarded of the participants of the tournament as far as what they allow to be discussed, what they don't allow to be discussed. I bring that up because there's a very, very interesting book out right now by Jeff Benedict and Armin Katayan about Tiger Woods. How much talk has there been on site about the contents of that book?
Nothing. I mean, I know I'm familiar with the book, but I've heard nothing about it.
Wow.
I think here's the thing. We're all kind of close to the situation. So it would have to be amongst a bunch of people who didn't know any of this was going on. And a lot of us have had interactions with Tiger, and a lot of us are not surprised by anything like that. Some of them stories may be true, some of them not true, but none of them are really surprising to the group of people that I'm around. You know, is there a buzz out there? Is there a buzz in the crowd? I don't know the answer to that. There may be. But around here, that's the guy we knew.
One more thing about Tiger Woods, and I find this extremely interesting. Once again, he appears to suck all the oxygen out of the room and out of any tournament that he is in, to the point that, John, I'm having trouble remembering a major championship where the man who was ranked number one in the world is an afterthought. You don't hear boo about Dustin Johnson, and pound for pound, he still may be the best golfer in the world. Can you remember a time like this?
Dustin's number one?
Yes.
Oh, I hadn't realized that. you know what I find funny about that, and I find interesting and ironic? Now that wave of player is getting grilled, like the last wave of players got grilled, not about them, but about Tiger. Now, you know, Rory McIlroy is sitting in the seat being asked about Tiger. Now Dustin Johnson is sitting in the seat being asked about Tiger. Justin Thomas, you know, they are this year's Ernie Els and David Duval and all of that. I find so much irony in that. He does suck out all the oxygen. I mean, it is Tiger Woods all the time. You said it on the show. We've all said it. Doesn't move the needle. He is the needle. So I find that when it happened the first time on the morning wave, you saw the guys get a little, you know, perturbed by it by the end. It's still new to these guys. I mean, he's still the new guy out there. And we've talked about this on the show. You know, they all would like to take a crack at him at his best. So it's still all new to them. But, you know, Lord knows, if he wins a major or two and that conversation keeps going place, they'll get tired of it. I'm looking right now at Sergio Garcia, and it makes me smile because he's been through it all. He was at the beginning, and here he is now in 2018.
I'm glad you brought that up. I was wondering if, and when the, I call it Tiger fatigue, was going to set in. Because like you said, this is a novelty to these guys at this point. They've never lived through, you know, them going out and shooting a 64 and being asked how Tiger played that day. And they almost seem amused at times by it and somewhat confused at times by it. But I haven't sensed them becoming, you know, sort of that tired and angry of it that we saw with the Duvals and Mickelsons and Els over the years. Do you sense that, too, that they haven't reached that point of being upset yet?
Oh, no, they have not at all. They're still happy to see him back. I mean, he, for many of them, for all of them, he was their hero. That was their golfing hero. And I think deep down inside, they look at him as, well, yeah, that's Tiger, but that's the 42-year-old Tiger. Again, I may have said this on the show, and I apologize for this. I'm talking to Brant Snedeker. Snedeker is quoted as saying to some folks when he played with him in L.A. and at Valspar, Snedeker said, he's back. He's all the way back. That's the guy I saw 15 years ago. He's got every one of the shots in his arsenal. This is not about coming back. Because that guy can hit every shot he used to be able to hit. So that's the Tiger they haven't quite experienced yet.
John Patrick is the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show. He's our guest taking dead aim. All right, I'm going to put you on the hot seat. I've been working on this, and I have mine, but I want to hear yours. Not necessarily in any particular order, but give me five guys that you would not be surprised in the least to see with a green jacket on Sunday afternoon, and perhaps a sleeper. And by sleeper, we're going to define that as someone who is not on the first page of players anyone's talking about.
Yeah, okay. I'll see if I can do all those people. I'd love to see, and I would not be surprised at all to see, despite last year, Justin Rose win this thing.
He is my number one pick, so I'm all with you on that.
Wouldn't be surprised. I really, really, really like. Maybe this is my sleeper. You qualify this. Alex Noren.
Absolutely a sleeper, but the best putter in the world right now.
Okay, then there's my sleeper. What I've learned from talking to these guys, when they say they're close, they're close. When they say they're putting well, they're putting well. I think Rory thinks he's putting well, and that would be his bugaboo around this place. So I like Rory. It's hard not to think about Dustin Johnson. It really is. I guess the putting could rear its ugly head, and he's obviously the last few weeks been struggling, I guess, and I don't know if this place gets to him in such a way that he finds something to play this place well. I'm not on a Phil Mickelson bandwagon. I just don't think so. I am not.
Well, here's my thing about Phil. And this is, you know, and I realize a lot of people like to pick Phil with their heart. I realize that it's Augusta National and, you know, Jack Nicklaus contended, had a top 10 finish, I think a top 6 finish when he was 58 years old. I get that. I get that this is the place you could do it. But, you know, Father Time is still undefeated and he is now a year, almost 2 years older than Jack was when he won his last major. Phil's 47 years old. I'm not ready to make that leap.
I'm not either, and I'm not ready to make it over the likes of Rory and Justin Rose and Justin Thomas. Nor am I ready to make a Tiger leap. You know, I it'll be a great story. It'll be great fun. There'll be so much excitement Thursday and Friday. I hope there's a Saturday and Sunday, and I think there will be a Saturday and Sunday. But would I be surprised if he's in contention? No. I just don't think it's going to happen.
I heard someone put it, and I forget who it was. I thought it was very, very interesting, an opinion on Tiger. There's no question that he has all the shots again. There's no question that he can contend at a tournament and at a major championship. But the quote was, I just don't know if what I've seen tells me that he is ready to cross the finish line first yet.
When when do we know that, when he crosses the finish line?
I think I'll know it if he's in contention again and doesn't hork a drive into someone's backyard like he did at Bay Hill. That was one of the most stunning things I've ever seen. I could never remember a moment of watching Tiger Woods all these years when he was stalking a leaderboard, when he was making a charge, and all of a sudden he put it in someone's pool.
But I think I said on the show, I think he explained that away pretty well. I think he was undecided about what kind of golf shot to hit, and the driver was too much club, and he really had to cut it. He should have hit three with it. More than a bad shot, that was a bad decision. And that's the way I felt about that shot. He should have hit the three wood. He should have hit the eight iron. But for some reason, he got to hit that darn driver, and it was not the right club. And he was indecisive about what to do. And funny to that story, you know, that's the thing his father always told him, and it's the thing I've heard he always says before he hits the shot, which is commit. You know, his father always said, make the decision, but whatever your decision is, commit to the shot. And he was not committed to that shot.
All right, so we got Justin Rose. We got Rory McIlroy.
I knew you'd go back to math.
We got DJ. We got Noren as your sleeper. You sort of threw in Justin Thomas. Is he on your list?
Yeah, more than Spieth. More than Spieth.
Really? More than Spieth, who's proven to be quite the horse for this course.
Yes, but I'm a firm believer that he is as good as his putting. So if he's putting well, he's right there. But to me, he's not the best ball striker. He is as good as his putting. So I have to see better putting.
All right. So we have Justin Thomas, DJ.
There's notes being taken.
Yeah, no, we need one more. One more.
Of a favorite?
Of a favorite.
Okay, but you'll think this is Dark Horse. Well, no, you know what? Different. Thomas Peters.
I was going to say
Paul Casey, but I'll say Thomas Peters.
That, my friend, is my sleeper. I think that guy's game is custom made for Augusta National. He was in the mix last year. Talk about a guy who, when he's putting, can win anywhere in the world. I really, really, really like his game.
Yeah, it's a strong, rock solid game.
Syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, my friend John Patrick, and when we return, the man who won the 2014 Mid-Am Championship and therefore earned the right to play in the 2015 Masters, Scott Harvey, takes dead aim at what it's like to participate in the world's greatest tournament, presented by RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are taking dead aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. This week, I had the chance to catch up with Carolina amateur golfing legend Scott Harvey. He of the 2014 Mid-Amateur Championship that earned him the right to play in the 2015 Masters.
Scott, I want to back things up. You qualified for the 2015 Masters by winning the 2014 Mid-Amateur Championship. As cool as it was to win the Mid-Am, and I'm sure that had been a goal of yours for a while, how long did it take, or was it immediate, that you thought to yourself, as cool as this is, I get to play in the Masters? How long after that win did that really sink in?
Did it sink in? That's a good question. You know, I thought about it pretty much all day, all week, you know, while I was playing in the Mid-Am. But as far as it sinking in, I guess it started to sink in when I took my first trip down there to practice and see the place. And, you know, I'd been to watch and whatnot before. But when you get there and you're gonna play the place, and then they start talking to you about, you know, here's the yardage book for the players, the tournament yardage book, and they asking you what kind of caddy you want, and this, that, and the other. I mean, that it really hits home pretty hard.
So you win the Mid-Am, and that usually is at the end of summer or early fall. I forget that. Is that August or September or something like that?
It's usually either in September or October.
All right. The club opens in mid-October. The invitations for the Masters don't go out until right before Christmas. Now, once you've qualified, are you then eligible to start practicing immediately when the club opens, or do you have to wait for the invitation to come?
No, they send you some correspondence immediately, and let you know, you know, hey, congratulations on qualifying. You have practice privileges. Here's how to get in touch with you know, the people you need to get in touch with, and this is how it works. And they start sending you, there's all kinds of correspondence along the way. And then, like you said, the official invitation comes right at Christmas time and so on and so forth. But yeah, once you qualify to play, you have practice privileges.
Is the invitation sent in the mail like regular correspondence, or does it come in a FedEx envelope? How does it arrive at your house?
It's just a regular mail from Augusta, and you know, I don't know. In my mind, I'm like worried about someone stealing it out of the mailbox or, you know, at the post office or something. You know, I'm freaking out. You know, but it's special. Luckily, my mailman's a golfer, and he knows what not to mess with.
Carolina amateur golfing legend Scott Harvey is our guest taking Dead Aim. Scott, of course, participated in the 2015 Masters Tournament. Quick personal question. A lot of us have been introduced to the game and spent a lot of time in the game, and our mentors in the game were our fathers. Your dad wasn't around for the 2015 Masters. I know it had to be on your mind. What do you think he would have thought about his boy teeing it up at Augusta National?
He would have been so proud. He's always been just the biggest supporter of me and my biggest cheerleader and really my biggest confidence booster. And you know, he would have just said, I know you could do it, and just have a ball. And I can just see the big smile on his face. And, you know, I thought about him. I think I've thought about him every single day since he's passed. And I mean, literally every day. And I just, there's a lot of things I've done since that time that I wished that he could have been a part of. And, you know, I know he's been there with me the whole way, but, you know, if I'd have been able to share it with him, you know, that would have been an extra little something. But I know he's there with me, and he's proud, and I just, trust me, I think about that all the time.
Going to ask you a couple of dopey questions that you'll think are dopey, but these are the kind of things that the everyman wants to know. Number one.
I love it. Bring it on. I love it.
Once you're qualified to play in the Masters Tournament, what sort of access to badges for friends and family do you have? Is there a number that you can purchase? Do they supply you some? How is that, and what are the limitations?
Yeah, so I can get 8 tickets per day. And so my immediate family, meaning my wife and children, that does not count towards the 8.
Oh, great.
So they get a weekly badge to go, you know, all access pass. You know, they can go in the clubhouse and whatever. And then on top of my immediate family, I get 8 per day. And if I could have gotten 308, it still wouldn't have been enough.
Well, that was my next question. Once people figure out that you qualified for the Masters, how often does your phone ring, and how many times did your phone ring with people that you had forgotten you ever met in your life looking for Masters badges?
Oh, man, I heard from people I hadn't heard from since high school. I mean, it was crazy. I had people, if I'd have known how many people were actually, like, keeping up with the mid-am that year, there's no way in hell I would have won. I mean, good Lord. I think I got done. I don't forget the number. It was like 680-something text messages. And I don't know, voicemail box was full and phone ringing off the hook. And that's the fun of it all, really. But like I said, I mean, it was cool. And I tell you what I got a lot of enjoyment out of was being able to. There's a couple of people that had never been before, and I got to give them a chance to drive down there and experience the Masters in person, and I just, you know, that was a thrill for me to be able to provide that to some people.
You know, it's a thrill for me to go with people who haven't been every time. I got to do it again this week with a good friend of my son's that we've played a ton of golf over the years, and he had never had the opportunity to go, and we went for par 3 day. And I always describe to people, once you walk in the main entrance and you walk past the concessions area, and then all of a sudden that world opens up to you. We're so used to the browns of winter. And just the dull colors of winter in the Southeast. And literally, it's like a Disney movie in Technicolor that comes to life in front of your face. And it's such an assault on your senses that 9 times out of 10, people have tears in their eyes. I mean, it's just an amazing sight that first time.
You know, it's funny you say that. So my first trip down there to play a practice round, I think, was in like, it may have been in October, you know, right after the mid-am. I went down there and I stood, and the guys in the, no, it was a November. I know what it was. It was in November. And the guys in the golf shop kind of laughing at me. I stood in the golf shop and just stared out the window because it was the greenest place I'd ever seen in my life. It looks fake. It just looks fake.
Yes.
It looks like you're walking around in a painting or something.
Scott Harvey, Carolina amateur legend, is our guest taking dead aim, and he, of course, participated in the 2015 Masters. Over-under, and I'll set the number at 20, over-under the number of practice rounds you played between the time you qualified and when you actually teed it up in a real practice round, a Masters week.
Way over. I didn't keep track, but I'll tell you what, by the time the tournament came around, I was well over the shock factor of, oh my God, I'm playing at Augusta. Like, I mean, now there was definitely an, oh my God, I'm playing in the Masters, but there was not a, oh my God, I'm playing at Augusta, because I'd already played it so much. I was like, I was kind of over the shock factor there, but yeah, well over 20.
Now, I know we've talked before, and it's become somewhat of a joke, the expense of housing your family for a week in Augusta. So I assume you stayed with them. You didn't take advantage of the crow's nest, or did you, for a night?
I did. You know, I stayed on the first night of the week. I stayed there just for the experience and just to say I did it and that kind of thing, you know, for the history and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But if I would have stayed there the whole week, I would have been secluded from all my friends and family. And I to me, that was a big part of the whole experience, was sharing it with them. So I did rent a house. We divided up the expenses between all my family, which saved, you know, a lot of money for everybody. But yeah, I was definitely just one night in the crow's nest.
What was that like, though, that night? I've always wondered that feeling of, you're in a sense in your own little apartment for a week, and you're staying at the most amazing golf location in the world. But at night, it's still just a building and there's grass outside. What is it like when you look out your window at night and you put two and two together that, holy crap, I'm sleeping at Augusta National Golf Club?
Yeah, it was surreal. You start thinking about all the people that have stayed up there, and like I said, the history of just that little tiny room. It's basically a little tiny room with these little dividers, and you know, there's other guys up there. There's a couple other amateurs stayed up there that they did the same routine I did, just for a night, just, you know, whatever. And when everybody left the property, and you know, it was just us, it was real quiet. And, you know, we went and walked around the clubhouse and messed around, and we actually, told someone to bring us some Coors Light up there. So they brought us a 12 pack of Coors Light. We just sat up there and drank some beers and talked trash all night.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh. Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Scott Harvey, Carolina amateur golfing legend, is our guest taking dead aim, talking about his experience in the 2015 Masters. I mentioned that I was down there for par 3 day on Wednesday, and I think that that's one of the coolest traditions at Augusta every year. I assume you participated in it. Who did you play with, and did you have a good time?
So, to me, I'd say that Wednesday was probably the most special of the whole thing from a standpoint of, so I played... I played with Vinny Giles, who's an amateur legend. He was a good friend of my father's, and I've had a little bit of a relationship with him growing up, you know, being around golf and going to tournaments with my dad. Vinny was always there and whatever. So he plays in the par three every year. I signed up to play with him. I thought that was really neat. And then another amateur buddy of mine, Byron Meff, that was playing that year, played with us as well. And, but for me, the special part was, my wife caddied for me and my son carried the putter and he putted every single hole, putted out for me. And, you know, every time he made it, the crowd went crazy and he gave his little fist pumps and was really into it. And then when we got done, you know, walking off the last green, there was a big row, like an autograph section. And all these kids were yelling at him for to sign autographs. So my son's over there signing all these, like, flags and hats and gloves and balls. It was just pretty unbelievable. It was pretty special.
Get you out of here with a couple of questions. I assume that you know Matt Parziali, the Mid-Am champ, who qualified this year by winning that tournament. I watched him play a practice round with Tiger Woods and Fred Couples. Who were some people that you played practice rounds with, and how did you go about the process of asking that question? Do you have to go through their people, or how is that done?
You know, it's different. And yeah, I do know Matt, know him very well. We've been talking all week, actually. But yeah, you know, I played with Ryan Palmer, Jason Day. I'm just going to name them all, and not, you know, in each group, but Ryan Palmer, Jason Day, Webb Simpson, Hideki Matsuyama, Billy Horschel, and Bubba Watson. And so how it works is it's basically just make your own game. There are no tee times, really. You just make your own game and you know, show up and play. And so for me, the first day I made up my own game and I showed up and just asked Ryan Palmer, Jason Day. And then after that, I had reached out to Webb Simpson. He's also a North Carolina guy, and kind of went through him to set up a couple games, and also Bubba Watson, who I grew up playing with, in junior golf and amateur golf. And I reached out to them and kind of made games that way.
Get you out of here on this. And this is really a question about the future of Augusta National based on some announcements that were made this week. I don't know of anyone who's a bigger proponent or cheerleader of amateur golf than you. To the point that even when you have been unsuccessful in tournaments and in championships, you're the first tweet I see encouraging others that are still left in the competition. I always love that about you. I really was blown away at the announcement this week from the chairman, and blown away in a good way, about a female amateur championship to be contested, the final round to be contested at Augusta National beginning next spring in 2019. I have a feeling that in time, this could be as big a boost to ladies golf in our country as it has been to the drive, chip, and putt competition. It's going to take more time, but I think it could have that same impact. What are your thoughts about Augusta National stepping up for the ladies game and this amateur championship being contested?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I mean, you know, really the women's golf has gotten a lot bigger, but really only at the pro level. I mean, they need a lot of amateur motivation, I'll say, or just things to play for, you know. And there's a lack of that, at least from what I see, in amateur women's golf. And just this is going to generate a lot more excitement. It's good for the game. I think Fred Ridley is a fantastic guy. He gets it, and it's just another example of you know, him doing something great for the game of golf. And I just can't say enough about how much I believe that this is going to help the game. I mean, it's just women's golf needs something like this, and the excitement among them. I have some friends with a lot of mid amateurs that are women. I haven't talked to them since that announcement, but I just know that, like I said, the excitement level's through the roof.
I mean, all I was thinking about was if you're an eighth grade girl, a seventh grade girl, if you're entering high school and you've been playing in amateur golf tournaments, you're thinking in your head right now, wow, that's where I want to go. That,
absolutely.
You know, and I think that is, I'm like you, I think that this could be just huge, huge for the ladies game in this country.
Yeah, we need it. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if something else doesn't come from this. It, you know, this happens for a little bit of time and then it snowballs into something else. I mean, that's just how stuff works. And I'm excited. It's a great thing. And you know, maybe some other places will start doing things as well.
There's not a finer amateur golfer or gentleman in the game in the Carolinas. That's Scott Harvey. And up next, we head to Augusta National. And from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, Ron Green Jr. takes dead aim at the Masters, presented by RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
Taking Dead Aim is presented by RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer joins us from Augusta National. Now, Ron, before we get to what we've seen thus far in the tournament, I want to back up a little bit to the beginning of the week and some really interesting things that took place, beginning with the chairman's press conference that takes place on Wednesday. To say earth-shattering news came out of that press conference might be an understatement. How surprised were you at the announcement of a women's amateur championship whose final 18 holes are going to be contested on the holy grounds of Augusta National Golf Club beginning next spring on the Saturday before the Masters?
Like seemingly everybody else, including most of the membership, from what I understand, very surprised. Kind of went in there thinking, okay, this would be nice. Polite little session with Fred Ridley. He sort of welcomes us and sort of sets the tone for what he's going to be doing and all that, and all of a sudden just goes right into that, and that's good. I thought it was a terrific move. I think it's just, it fits with what the club is about now and what they did with drive, chip, and putt, and sort of expanding the footprint of the club and the what the tournament can do and how it can reach, you know, beyond this week. And now they've turned, starting next year, they will turn Masters Week into a 9-day thing. And, it's, you know, I think everybody was struck that 15 years ago we were in the midst of the Martha Burke protests and all that. And who would have imagined that here we are with this situation now? I see no downside. I know some people quibble that it sort of cuts into some of the thunder of the ANA inspiration. But I don't think that's going to be a huge deal there. I think, it's a limited field anyway. But good for them.
Well, I disagree with the people getting up in arms about the ANA. You don't even begin coverage till 5 o'clock on the East Coast. The championship will almost be done, if not already contested at that point. And I agree with you totally on everything you said. And I think there's great irony. I said this in the opening. What was it? 16 years ago, we're dealing with Martha Burke and the National Organization of Women. The club didn't even have a female member until what, 2011 or 2012?
So, yeah, I think it was somewhere in there. Yeah. I lose track of the years.
Yeah, and now they are poised to do more for the ladies' game than anything in this country ever, and you referenced the reason why. They took drive, chip, and putt, which was a dead competition, and in a span of 5 years created the most sought-after junior event in the game of golf in this country. It may take a little longer, but I see no reason to think that the imprint the club will make on the ladies' game will be just as significant and have just as much impact in the future.
Well, and I think yet another thing they've done is they've opened up the opportunity. If you want to come to Augusta, you may not be able to score tickets to the Masters itself. I think there will be a limited number of tickets available. People who want to come down here and see the Saturday round in the Women's Amateur Championship. We were sitting kicking around ideas or thoughts about the thing the other day, and there are some interesting things. Are they going to allow these women to come play practice rounds here? Because they're going to start a champions retreat the first 2 days, and then only 30 players are going to advance to play here on that Saturday. But will they show up here, effectively with no idea about what the golf course is other than what they've seen on TV? Those are all things they've got to work through. I mean, there'll be a television component, but Fred Ridley said they hadn't gotten that far yet. But he sort of semi-joked that I imagine I'll have a couple phone messages on my desk when I get back in from this press conference. So, it was quite a whimsy between that and then sort of the par three thing with Jack and his grandson making a hole in one. That was a pretty vibrant Wednesday.
Yeah, I was going to get to that next. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer is our guest taking Dead Aim. One more thing about Chairman Ridley. Now Chairman Payne, who came before him, I don't think ever had any intention of having changes to the golf course be a part of his legacy. Billy Payne wanted his legacy to be growing the game and apparently infrastructure created in and around the club, and he was great at both. I got the impression from listening to Chairman Ridley's press conference, and we prefaced this with him being a player, a former amateur champion, a Walker Cup captain. He knows with which he speaks. But referencing Bobby Jones' thoughts about the 13th hole in particular, that the second shot to go for it to that green must be a momentous decision, and that right now he doesn't feel, nor does anyone feel, that it is a momentous decision by any player to go for that green, signaling change is definitely coming, in my opinion, to the golf course, and especially with the women's amateur tournament coming. If nothing else, we're going to have to create some new tee boxes.
Yeah, I think they could just play the member tees, which are about 6,200 yards for the women's ams, what someone said, although they might create something. Yeah, I mean, there people have already seen plans for the fifth hole, trying to stretch it back a little bit and get that tee away from the fourth green. I mean, because they're almost one and the same, and it creates a little traffic issue once in a while. But, yeah, 13 will be very interesting. I think what Fred Ridley said was obviously, you know, spoke to the notion of what that hole should be and maybe what it's not right now. And I think everybody suspects the easy idea is to move the tee back there. Although Chris Spence, the golf course architect, designer, sent me a thing the other day, said, here's the easy fix. And he had just showed an overhead shot, and he said they need to reroute the creek along the left side. When it cuts back in around the corner, just take it back out more, move it about 10 yards to the right, to where the guys like to put their tee shots there, and suddenly that will take away the temptation to try to hit it around the corner like guys are doing. So we'll see what they do. Whatever they choose to do, when we see it, it will look like it's been here for 50 years.
Ron, I was out there on Wednesday, and there were two things that took place that really, one I hadn't seen in a long time, and it was fun to share with my son who had never seen it, and that was an unexpected trip to the golf course at noon from one Tiger Woods playing a practice round with Matt Parziali from Massachusetts and Fred Couples. And, you know, with there being no cell communication at Augusta National among the patrons, word has to spread the old-fashioned way. And so for four or five holes, we got to follow Tiger Woods before it got crazy like it does. But he got to see that Tiger Woods effect, and you've seen it many times. I think when Tiger teed off on two in that practice round, John Rahm and Rory McIlroy were putting out on three. And these are not two unaccomplished golfers, Rory McIlroy and John Rahm. They had a significant gallery. The moment that gallery saw who was playing number two, we joked that it looked as if Rory McIlroy and John Rahm finished their round amongst friends and family, and that's it. The effect of watching the excitement that Tiger has brought back to the Masters, it was palpable watching on TV early in the week, but you could really feel the energy out there on the golf course.
Yeah, I mean, on Thursday during the first round with Tiger's, you know, all the anticipation around Tiger's return to major championship golf and the Masters, I went out to, and walked the first nine holes, and I went out and listened to Tiger play the first nine holes because, you know, there were so many people, it was hard to say you got to see much of anything, but you could hear it, and you know, it's he's a star of stars here. I mean, when he and Phil played together on Tuesday afternoon, it was the number of fans watching him, just it was almost staggering. It feels like they have more people here during the early part of the week anyway. And watching them play 17, it was five deep around 17, and you turn to look left up the hill toward 18, and it's just, you know, it looks like Sunday afternoon will look down here. So, you know, it's been you know, no shortage of excitement around this place. You know, it's an interesting leaderboard, and maybe not making quite the number of birdies people thought, but still got a ways to go.
10 years ago, even money, Tiger playing with Phil in a practice round and Moses parting the Red Sea.
It was not likely to have happened. It was such a surprise this time when it did. But, yeah, I mean, you knew there had been a thawing in the relationship through the years, and I think age and life and just you know, gradual acceptance of who the other one is, and led to it. But I mean, that was a really nice thing, and who knows, could we see them again together in a Ryder Cup this fall? Wouldn't that be something?
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer is our guest taking Dead Aim. The other thing that occurred on Wednesday is the annual tradition of Par 3 Day. The tournament was canceled last year due to weather. It looked shaky on Wednesday morning as to whether or not it was going to occur, but we had great weather for the Par 3 contest, and we were treated to some absolute fireworks from some of the legends in the game. It was really, really neat. I don't know if you got to go out there, but it was really neat to be on any golf course and see the names player, T. Watson and Nicklaus rising up the leaderboard and hearing the roars as they were coming, you know, from the fourth and fifth hole as we were positioned between eight tee box and nine green. It was just a blast to be out there on Wednesday.
Yeah, I imagine it was. I was not over there, but I was looking in on it and everything, and it was, it's such a popular, I always call it the cutest day in golf. I mean, with all the kids doing this and that with their dads and caddying and taking swings. But, yeah, I mean, to see those three guys go out there and play like they did and, you know, sort of bring back, remind us of who they were and what they did. And then, I mean, Tom Watson winning it or anything. And then, I mean, the Nicklaus moment, as he said, you know, one of the great moments in his golf career. And that's totally understandable.
Well, you know what was interesting to all of us who were out there, and like I said, I was there in between 8 tee box and 9 green, and they were the last group coming through. And by the end of the day, and you referenced it being the cutest day in golf, you almost become numb to trying to figure out who's caddying for who, because it's been just a progression of wives, girlfriends, kids, dads, uncles, friends. You don't know, and you get tired of trying to figure it out. I really don't think the patrons knew that was Jack Nicklaus's grandson until well after the fact when word matriculated back. We went wild because it was a hole in one and someone hit it, but I don't think that was as big a deal to the patrons on site as those who were watching on TV that had the knowledge.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously you can speak to that, but yeah, I wouldn't imagine a lot of people knew exactly who it was. I mean, television certainly did. And, between that and the Tony Finau celebration dislocation and everything, that became sort of what took over television highlights for about 24 hours there.
I mean, you know, it was a couple of years ago that Tiger talked about popping his wrist back into place, but that looked like Joe Theismann on the ground putting his ankle back together.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, did he just do what I think he did?
Oh, my God. Oh, Rod Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer at Augusta National is our guest taking Dead Aim. As we're recording this, the second round is underway. I wanted to talk about a tweet you sent out yesterday, and it was just, I felt the same way. The tweet was, I want to look away, but I can't. Obviously, you were referencing what was going on with the current Masters champion and the 15th hole and how he almost 10-cupped it and ran out of balls.
Yeah, I mean, that was just, you know, you sit there and say, how many times are you ever going to see a guy make a 13 at the Masters? Well, I think you're going to see it three times ever or whatever, you know, and suddenly you get the defending champion do it. And, you know, I mean, at one point during the thing, while he's putting those wedge shots back in the water, I'm wondering, is he trying to make a point? I'm going to hit the shot I'm supposed to hit, and look what you've done to the golf course so that it doesn't work for me. You know, I'm sure, you know, while a lot of us sort of gasped and chuckled and sort of imagined ourselves in that position, I would imagine that tournament officials were looking at that like, okay, is this too much? I mean, you know, you saw Mark Leishman sort of gun one over the green from back of the green there down into the water. And, you know, whether there was a statement there or not, I don't know that he wanted to make it to the expense of a 13, but it was man, that was just when you think you got it figured out. I mean, he's get himself back in position to be in the tournament, and then suddenly that was, oof, that was the classic train wreck.
Well, you know, Ron, you've covered this tournament and seen many more of these tournaments than I have, and I've seen a lot of people who have said and tried to make points to the Augusta National Golf Club about what they think should and should not be. And it's been my experience that the Augusta National Golf Club has a very simple philosophy, and that is, if you don't like it, you don't have to show up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's basically the way it is with any tournament, but particularly here. Here's how we do things, fellas. And, you know, I think they're probably concerned about, I mean, Fred Ridley's stated, I mean, he's concerned about how far the ball goes. And so the defense of the golf course is the greens, which are really, really difficult, really fast. I mean, and you see it on TV, but standing out there watching Rory McIlroy three putt the first hole for his second round, I mean, he didn't hit his putt hard enough, and instead of on a normal green would have maybe been 4 or 5 feet away, I mean, it turns left and goes about 18 feet away, and suddenly, you know, he's just made a mess of things and didn't hit that horrible a putt. but it's just because of what you get and where you get it. And, you know, they like to put it on the edge, and they have done a good job of that so far.
Get you out of here on this. Speaking of being on the edge, I mentioned as we're recording this conversation, the second round is underway, and there's some carnage out on the golf course. What looked like after round one that the lead going into the weekend would be 8 or 9 under, no one's getting near that number, and it's starting to resemble a U.S. Open in terms of scoring out there. How have they set this golf course up? Have they cut on the sub-air systems overnight and really dried it out? What are we watching?
Yeah, I mean, I think the greens are really, really quick and really, really dangerous. And then you put, I mean, you look at some places, you know, it's such a second shot golf course. You look at where they cut the flag on the 11th hole here in the second round. I mean, it is, it's not quite floating in the water, but I mean, it is right there on the edge. I mean, you look at, you know, the left side, they've got on the left side at one, which is, you know, quietly the hardest hole nobody ever talks about down here. So you can't miss left, and then so you play out to the right, and you leave yourself a big sort of sweeping putt. You know, the back of the—I watched several groups. I watched Rory, I watched Spieth, and some other guys hit the shot on four, and they're all guessing wrong on the wind. They think they're playing in more into the wind than they are, and they kept hitting the ball over the green on a 225-yard par three. You know, if it's one guy, you think, okay, just missed club or the wind didn't get it. But then I watched like three or four guys do it, so. You know, the edge here is so severe that, you know, you hear about guys talking about being patient and understanding what they're going to do. Now, I like it better when the Masters is sort of a little more offensive than this one has been. But, you know, Tiger talked after his first round. I mean, he kept hitting the ball above the hole, and he's just playing defense the whole time. Instead of trying to make it, you're trying not to three-putt.
Okay, real quick, based on what we know is coming Saturday morning in terms of weather, and what we're seeing on Friday, give me the winning score on Sunday afternoon.
Somebody will get it to 9 under par.
There you have it from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. That's Ron Green Jr. Hey, I'd also like to thank Carolina amateur golfing legend Scott Harvey and the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, John Patrick, for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've talked about, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast on Apple Podcasts, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Weather-wise, well, today looks like a washout. But tomorrow will be glorious to tee it up. Either day, perfect for your living room and watching the Masters. And if you do find a way to tee it up and take on this game that breaks our heart and haunts our soul, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors.